Well, good afternoon, all. I'd like to echo the thoughts, previous statements. These have all been wonderful presentations. I now feel a little more pressure than I originally did. If your mind does wander as I'm talking, I assure you, you will be riveted once Elizabeth starts talking, though. As was mentioned, three of us worked on this project, Elizabeth from University of South Carolina, myself from Impact International, and Josh Noden from Westat. And there are no relationships to disclose. As you know, the question of how do public policymakers best allocate scarce resources is a very complex question. Once possible alternatives are identified, you have to somehow be able to measure those alternatives and see if there is a return on investment there worthwhile. Any alternatives have to be structured in such a way, or possible alternatives must be structured in such a way that you can measure the effectiveness of the proposed alternative, and you must be able to compare the effect of the proposed alternative. What we'll be talking about today is a specific case study from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Specifically, they are seeking information to aid its decision-making process regarding services provided to severely emotionally disturbed children. This is an exploration of whether or not community-based alternatives to psychiatric treatment, if community-based alternatives to psychiatric treatment facilities is worthwhile. There are 9 grantee states that are participating in this demonstration. Grantee states can use funds to either A, transition youth out of psychiatric residential treatment facilities or PRTFs, or divert individuals that would otherwise be going into PRTFs. There are some minimum requirements for individuals to be enrolled in this demonstration. All enrollees must require institutional care. That level is determined by each individual state that is participating. Our members of the waiver target group, states can either pick specific groups that they want to look at. For example, they may want to only look or work with individuals that have fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or they can have a pretty wide open enrollment criteria. They must meet applicable Medicaid financial eligibility criteria, again specific to each state, require one or more waiver services to function in the community. And lastly, they must have the choice of whether or not to enroll in the demonstration project. As the decision maker, CMS is interested in, of course, the effectiveness of home and community-based services as compared to the PRTF. Although they're looking at several questions, or quite a few questions, there are 2 driving questions that they are looking to answer in this demonstration. The first one is cost neutrality. That is, does treating an individual in a HCBS cost the same or less that's on average than treating them in a PRTF? And the second question is related to the functional status of the youth. And they want to know whether or not treatment in the HCBS allows them to maintain or improve their functional status. There are 3 different instruments that are being used to measure functional status, the CANS, the CBCL, and the CAFIS. Well, we won't go into the specific instruments during this presentation, but know that states have a choice between one of those 3.
I'm the program evaluator for the South Carolina PRTF program. And what I'm going to be presenting on today is the challenges that South Carolina has encountered, mainly because of the financial state of our state in the last few years. So I wanted to start by talking about kind of what children's mental health care looked like in South Carolina before the waiver was implemented. And it was actually implemented in 2007. Prior to that time, if a child was a Medicaid recipient, that child basically had one choice. He or she went to the community mental health center that was a state agency run center. There were really no choice in providers. There were a handful of PhD level psychologists who were Medicaid providers, but other than that, they went to their local community health center. And as you can think about it, that could be very difficult. What if you're in a rural community where you know all the workers in that center? You may not feel comfortable going there. So one of the big pieces, in my view, in South Carolina was that this is allowing choice for children who normally did not have choice of providers. So prior to the waiver, the Department of Mental Health, our state agency, were basically the gatekeepers for any child receiving services. They sometimes contracted with private providers, but in general, they did the services themselves. They decided if that child needed to go into residential treatment facility or what other services they needed. One of the other issues that occurs in South Carolina that is still going on now is that our agencies are very siloed. So we have multiple service agencies that work with children. We have the Department of Health and Human Services, which is our Medicaid agency. We have the Department of Mental Health. We have the Department of Social Services. We have the Department of Juvenile Justice, everything you can think of. We also have a state agency called Continuum of Care, which is specifically for lower functioning children who need case management services. So all of these different agencies, they don't necessarily work together very well because they all have their own agendas, they have their own budgets. There are a lot of issues involved with trying to get them to work together. We also have difficulty within our agencies with communication. And to give you an example of this, when the waiver first began in 2007, there was one section of our Medicaid agency, the South Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, that planned the waiver. At the time, they did not include the eligibility division of their same agency. So the plans that they were making for enrolling children and how that enrollment should happen in Medicaid was not done considering the policy that had already been written. And although that communication within that agency has gotten much better, there are still some issues with that because, again, within the agency itself, there is a lot of siloed behavior. Another example of this is when we've been working with our state agencies, with the children who have been enrolled in the waiver, we have two that have been very involved. We have the Medicaid agency and we have Department of Mental Health. Each one has different databases that don't communicate. So as the evaluator, when I try to get information about the children who were enrolled in the waiver program, I have to contact both agencies. Both agencies also have to contact each other because one is involved with actually enrolling the child in Medicaid based on financial status. The other one is enrolling the child based on whether he or she meets the level of care in terms of mental illness. So there are just a lot of different problems with the way our agencies are set up in general. Also, some of the other challenges to waiver implementation are just the roles and responsibilities of the stakeholders. In the very beginning of the waiver, we had three different agencies working together. We had the Medicaid agency, we had the Department of Mental Health that was actually operating the waiver itself. They developed all of the manuals for how a child would be enrolled, what kind of services, what were required of service providers, that type of thing. Then we had a third nonprofit agency called Federation of Families that's a family advocacy organization. And their purpose was to help the families navigate through the system. And getting these three different groups to work together has also been very difficult. When I came in as a program evaluator, my assumption was that a lot of what I would be doing would be to help collect the quantitative data for the national evaluation that Mark was a part of and do some program evaluation. But unfortunately, if you are in the evaluation community, you've probably heard the term going native. And that is basically what we've had to do because there have just been so many challenges that a lot of what my role is to find out what those are and to kind of help push the program along. And that's been a continuing process since 2007. It's getting somewhat different. We'll talk about how things have changed lately. One of the other challenges to waiver implementation is we've had new program and new processes because, as I mentioned previously, if a child needed mental health services in South Carolina, it was Medicaid eligible. Basically, it was only the community mental health centers. That was the only choice. Well, now with the waiver, they're able to enroll private providers to provide services for these children. So as a result, we have a wide range of private providers, some who are less experienced than others, although they have to meet the same requirements in terms of licensure, credentials, education. Some of them are not as well versed in what they should be doing to help treat these children. In fact, we've had some providers who have come in from North Carolina who were actually business people, and then they contract out with different clinicians to actually provide the services. So there's a great diversity in just the abilities and the quality of care that some of the children are getting. Also, just to the new enrollment process for Medicaid for these children, because not only do they have to meet the level of care in terms of how severe their mental illness is, but also with Medicaid eligibility in terms of financial reasons. So there have been different problems with that. For children who already have SSI, they can be enrolled immediately. For other children, it has taken up to 45 days because of the financial eligibility difficulty. Some of the challenges to waiver continuation, that was all about implementation. A lot of the problems that we've experienced in the last few years has had to do with the state budget. The state budget has been a huge problem since basically 2007. So there have been starts and stops constantly along the way. When the waiver was first planned, the original first year of the waiver, we were supposed to have 50 participants, second year 125, and then it was going to keep going up to 150. And at the end of the waiver, which was 5 years, it should have been statewide. Well, we are now beginning our fourth year. We have been capped at 50 children. We're only serving 6 counties, and it's all mainly because of financial problems. Some other challenges to the waiver continuation is staffing changes. The operating agency originally had one full-time person. That full-time person quit 2 months after the enrollment of the first child. That person was not replaced until January of this year. During that time, we've had one person who basically had other supervisory roles, so she was never full-time on this. For the administrating agency, when we first began, there were 4 full-time people, 1 part-time person. We are now down to no one with that agency. There's also been restructuring of program administration. Because of all the difficulties communicating between agencies, the Medicaid agency has taken over both the administrative roles and the operating roles. We, at this point, have one person running the whole waiver on both sides. They're having difficulty getting approval to hire other staff because of hiring freezes. We also have an uncertain political climate right now. South Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, which is the Medicaid agency, is a cabinet agency. The director and all the deputy directors are hired by the governor. And with the new election, we don't really know what's going to happen. Also, funding has been an issue. In 2009, 2010, state fiscal year, which is runs July 1st to June 30th, this was the year that just ended, there were $300 million in state funds for the Medicaid agency. Currently, the estimate for their current fiscal year is it's going to be down to $18 million. So there's a huge problem just even funding what's going on. Luckily, with the waiver, 100% of the administrative cost, meaning basically staffing, is being covered by the federal government. But for the clinical services that the children are receiving, it's still state-funded by about 30%. That changes back and forth. So even though I've talked about a lot of the challenges, I do want to leave you with kind of a silver lining. At this point, we have not gotten enough quantitative data yet to really determine how well the waiver is serving these children, but we do telephone interviews with caregivers every 6 months. So I wanted to leave you with what they're saying, because when you look at all of the challenges, it's very overwhelming, but when you get down to talking to the people who are receiving the services, they're very pleased. And these are some of the most recent reports that we've gotten. Basically, in general, interviewees confirm that the program provides critical services that may not otherwise be available to enrollees and their families. They're very pleased with what they're getting. They're saying that because of receiving services in the communities, their children are able to remain within the home and are not having to be placed in residential treatment. They report that they feel included in the planning process and their choice of service providers. As one interviewee put it, you're not stuck. And again, remember, previously, these children were stuck, basically. They could get their services from one community mental health center, and that was it. And finally, one caregiver wants parents and others to know that CHANCE, which is the name of our waiver in South Carolina, the CHANCE program is the best thing you can do for your child. And with that, hopefully, it will continue. Thank you.